Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Gray says, I can't go to Yemen. I'm an analyst. You're a theorician. You don't want to go there. I wouldn't want to go there either. It doesn't seem like a good place to be, but it is a place that is currently bombarding U.S. ships, U.S.-related ships, U.K. ships, and the U.S. Army went to defend these commercial ships against those attacks. We're talking about three ballistic missile attacks. One or two of them appear to have done damage. The other one appears to have done no damage. One of the ship is at risk of sinking. I don't know what that means. Maybe sinking, maybe not. Probably not. I don't know. And those are the Houthi rebels of Yemen who are, someone was asking, what's a Houthi? Well, I don't know much about them other than they are an organized military force that is considered illegitimate by the powers of this world. So they keep calling them the Houthi rebels. But technically, they are the rebels who control this part of Yemen for a long time. And so Yemen being at the southern border with the sea of Saudi Arabia. So it's at the peak of Saudi Arabia, right where all of the ships come into the Red Sea to head toward Israel and toward those canals that make them pass toward North Africa and Europe. So it is an important passing point, and the Houthi rebels are probably bombarding ships in relation to Israeli actions and to protest and to give trouble to the allies of Israel, including the U.S. Lendolt Guntram says, time to activate another Islamic State or some similar varsity affiliate, this time in Yemen. People have been calling bullshit on this. People have been talking about the Gulf of Tonkin incident being the bombarding of ships that justified the entry of the U.S. into the Vietnam War. And people have been commenting that it's kind of a similar incident. It seems like an incident that could be used as a justification for further involvement of the U.S. And it's totally possible. I mean, it's a small incident. From the damage that I can see, it's very small. Starting a whole war on this justification would be kind of weird as far as I'm concerned. One of the events was two drones that were neutralized, and three other ships were targeted by ballistic missile. Ayan says, Yemeni Shiite group that fought the Saudis. Yeah, so basically they have kept this part at the southern part of Saudi Arabia, which is where they take action from. Stephen Robinson says, just like the actions of October 7th, false flag. Yeah, you never know if it's been ordered by the U.S. for justification purposes. The networks of U.S.-funded entities in this part of the world are so intermingled with the real terrorists that it's like, you never know which side, why is this happening? Seems like a very small action overall. But yeah, if it comes to be used as a Gulf of Tonkin type of excuse by the U.S. to get further involved in this region, first, there's lots of pressure on Joe Biden to do so. Joe Biden is torn by two sets of influences here. The elite influence is probably very strong on pushing him to get involved, the pro-Israeli lobby, etc. The popular influence in his party is probably very much far left anti-war, so it's pulling him back against the war temptation. But there's also the objective reality of electoral politics in the U.S., which which basically makes it so that presidents are extremely rewarded for going to war, because somehow the American public is kind of stupid and will vote for a president more if they have started a war. It's kind of a reflexive tradition. We stand with the chief in command. We want to vote him back just to show how much we're behind him. It's a kind of loyalty response that is very deplorable when you think about it. It's like, would you vote for anything, anyone, just because you're at war? Yes. But it's the reality of what it is. And so there's a chance that if Joe Biden doesn't start a war now, that he's getting voted out, that he's not going to win the next election. I'm not over this timeline, the spectacular timeline of Yahoo. In 1998, Yahoo refuses to buy Google for $1 million. In 2002, Yahoo realizes its mistake and tries to buy Google for $3 billion. Google says, give us $5 billion. Yahoo says no. In 2008, Yahoo refuses to be sold to Microsoft for $40 billion. And in 2016, Yahoo is sold to Verizon for $4.6 billion. Wow. What a list of missed opportunities. They could have changed the history. That is why you end up seeing big deals, buying these small websites sometimes for ridiculous sums. Like when Instagram was bought, it's because I think the tech sector has understood that you just can't let them grow. You can't let an innovative little company grow because it could take over the market in a few years. So you end up having, people have understood the lesson and they buy their competitions. Guowei says, I'm 18 years old. What is Yahoo? Yahoo was a dominant search engine back in the days when Google wasn't dominant. And it's fascinating when you think about Yahoo, because it used to be the default search engine people would go to. In between the domination of AOL and Google, there was Yahoo. And eventually Yahoo, just comparatively to Google, became totally unusable. The search results were not good. And yeah, they lost the competition. It became unusable. They were spamming with ads and journal newspaper links when you were looking for an internet result. And Google had understood how to lead people to the right place on the internet. End of the line, Joel says, Yahoo had a static index, no algorithm for search. Yeah, the Google algorithm showed its power then. Now, the Google algorithm arguably has been, at this point, reduced so much by leftists, you know, with their censorship and their, oh, we won't show results like that or like this, that at this point, the Google search engine looks very much like the initial Yahoo search engine. You have the human manipulation touch to it. Gay guys are giving their opinion on Israel.
Pinkwashing is a term that angry, jealous, purple-haired girls like to throw around anytime fabulous gay guys get along with Jews. Call me crazy, but I'd rather be at a circuit party in Tel Aviv getting head than in the Gaza Strip getting beheaded. I love my Jew.
Okay. Pro-Israeli because he wants to have his dick sucked by Israelis rather than have his head chopped by Hamas. I guess that if you compare it that way, you have to grant the argument. Getting your head chopped isn't super interesting. John Drake says, it's crazy that we're so dumb. A depression will change this quickly. You mean an economic depression? I don't even know if a major depression can save the state of society. I guess that you are invoking a depression in which there would be an actual selection effect for intelligence. The problem is, I think we're so far from this. I think that even if the whole of society was to crumble, you're going to have some government intervention of some kind that will destroy the meritocracy of it and the evolutionary selective aspect of it. A huge hole has opened in the sun atmosphere, and it is spewing a stream of solar wind directly toward Earth. NASA's SDO photographed the structure, which stretches almost 800,000 kilometers along its long axis. This is a coronal hole. Look at this. We have broken the sun, ladies and gentlemen. The sun is torn apart and opened, and it's now sending a solar storm that will arrive to Earth somewhere between December 4th and December 5th. So that's in 24 hours to 48 hours from now. Be prepared, but they are talking about a mild to a medium level of geomagnetic storm, G1 to G2, together with a glancing blow CME and a G2 class moderate geomagnetic storm. New guy says we'll be fine. Well, if Bitcoin has to go to zero, it's happening now or never. You know, people keep saying Bitcoin will go to zero, Jeff. Magnetic storms. What about magnetic storms, Jeff? And I'm like, there doesn't seem to have been magnetic storms wiping out our Bitcoins up to now. I'm willing to trust that there won't be in the next few years. I'm okay. DK Shadow says, oh no, the solar flares will wipe all of our Bitcoin. It's like these the meme of the skeptics, you know. Oh, magnetic storms, Jeff, you haven't thought about this? Don't FUD our Ponzi scheme, or you're a hacking terrorist. Anti-woke economic terrorists have now wiped out $5 trillion in stock value. Anti-ESG hysteria driven by online hate platforms has disproportionately eroded portfolios of color and sabotaged our planet's future. Call it what it is, terrorism. Yes! Oh my God, the ESG, hysteria. It's an ESG hysteria. This whole idea that these companies are properly labeled as being good for the environment, good for society, and good for governance, bullshit. It's all good is defined here as fitting the leftist narrative, fitting the leftist priors. None of these, you know, you don't get an ESG bonus if you're a pro-liberty company. Yet, arguably, consider, for example, X. Will X have ESG credits or ESG bonus points for defending the First Amendment and for defending free speech? Never. And so it's bullshit. You are arbitrarily deciding that if X was banning anti-trans speech, it would have good ESG score. But if X is allowing that speech to occur under a protection of the First Amendment, then suddenly X is against good governance, against good society. So the ESG score is a totally biased system of review by elites that decide what is ESG and what is not. And the problem is it had become a kind of gatekeeping mechanism because these elites were deciding this is a good ESG company, and it was sending all those fund managers from governments like communist governments and states to be sending, and big, you know, these big retirement corporations and investment corporations that take in money from state employees, that kind of stuff. They were all buying this ESG stuff, just trusting the label. And by trusting the label, they were increasing the value of these stocks, because these stocks could only rise. They kept getting bought by these NPCs, these NPC portfolio managers that were only listening to the ESG labels. Tell me where to buy, dear elite. So that is completely anti-meritocratic. As we have seen in the case of Elon Musk, they actually went after him. And I think Tesla lost some points at some point, and Elon Musk was like, unbelievable. Like, these other companies are selling less electric cars than us, and yet they get the same level of reward and bonuses. It's a scam. So let's destroy it. And I'm so happy. You know, they say $5 trillion in stock value has been wiped out. That's because of the freedom of the people. That's because they were overpriced. That's because it was virtual value. You had told yourself a story. That story was fake, and people called you out on it. And now we are back to a regular valuation. I mean, we're not there yet. I think this should continue. AN says, should I put half of my wage into Bitcoin? You should put into Bitcoin whatever you can afford not having in your bank account. Simple as this. That is the guideline. That is my standard. In fact, we have a super chat that came during the night by T. He sends $10. Thank you so much. He says, I put my savings into crypto and I've been leeching off state welfare. Also, no longer a Finnish army reservist, so I won't die for my feminist country where Russia to attack. I like to think of it as a lifestyle of protest. Does JF support this kind of lifestyle for Western men, if it includes baby making? Well, that's a very interesting question. And I've given my thoughts on this before. You know, I am totally in objection to these people who say that if you're a libertarian, you shouldn't take state welfare. Or if you're a libertarian, you shouldn't drain all of the money that you can drain from governmental programs. I say to the contrary, if you are a true libertarian, you should pursue the illogical, irrational, parasitic, opened position of the government down to its logical endpoint, which is the full drainage of wealth of the government. And one way you can do this very easily as a libertarian is to take welfare, take everything you can from the government. So to the contrary, I'm not seeing it. People were saying that Ayn Rand was a hypocrite because she got some social welfare at the end of her life. She got social welfare, therefore she was not a true libertarian. No, I say to the contrary, if the libertarian wants a world in which there are no parasitic structures, no non-consensual structure, one of the game theoretic way in which you can accomplish this is by draining all existing parasitic systems through increased parasitism. So basically, make the system be more heavy for the system until it can't carry anyone anymore. That is one of the objectives of the libertarian. Now, you can be a libertarian on principle and say, oh, on principle, I refuse welfare. But the problem is the welfare you refuse is poured down the pockets of someone else. It's strengthening the state and it's making the welfare system possibly last longer. Ariel Suarez says, Jeff, how do I clip this? Please tell me. Well, you have to either download at the end of the show or you can record on your screen with the Streamlabs OBS. You have screen recorders if you want to catch it live. There's various ways, but you have to be equipped in advance. Or you can download the file at the end and clip out, select the starting point and the end point. All right. So, yes, I totally support your lifestyle. If you have found a way to accumulate Bitcoin, and very often when you store Bitcoin, you will be considered poor by the government, because as long as you don't sell your Bitcoin, you're making zero a year. Your salary is zero. So you become richer in theory when you have Bitcoin. But as long as you don't sell the Bitcoin, and I'm not talking about hiding this from the government here. I'm not talking about anything illegal. I'm saying as long as you don't sell your Bitcoin, your salary really is zero. And so you end up receiving all this welfare from socialist countries. And if you have babies, they're going to give you even more welfare. So that is absolutely a way to live, and a way that I don't disagree with. I think it's one way in which we can undermine these systems. It's a form of protest. I totally agree with your analysis, T. And yes, you do use the opportunity to make more babies and get more welfare for the babies. Elon Musk says we are microbes on a dust moat in a vast emptiness overwhelmingly dominated by the sun. Okay, deep thinking right here. Deep thinking. And here's the thing, Elon. We're stuck on that dust ball forever. No matter how much technology you want to develop, everything out there is going to be raped by entropy. And raped by the winds of the sun. Just if our Bitcoin were held onto the moon, they would be lost very soon. Because the solar winds, the particles that are not redirected by a protective magnetic layer, it's all just constantly blowing onto Mars, constantly drying the planet out, making it dust of dust of dust. Basically, you're talking about, it's like having a flame. If you go live on Mars, it's like going to live on a planet where someone would be with a blowtorch, just constantly burning that planet. And at some point, it's so burnt that it's not even black like carbon. It's red. It's dust. It's like desert. You want to live under that flame? That is how it is to live in Mars. Now, you can make a bubble, that is the situation, like that's what Matt Damon does in the movie. You create a bubble of air, but now you're living in a bottle of glass. Now you have other problems for you. Now you have, well, first you're going to need some solar panels that can block the sun from entering that bottle. Then you're going to need to have a kind of ecosystem that can sustain, that won't have a single element missing for life. Because, you know, we don't realize it on Earth, because on Earth, everything gets recycled back into the cycle of life. But if you think about building a glass bottle out there on Mars that is completely isolated from the Earth, you're going to have to carry a lot of material, nutrients, a lot of fertilizers, that kind of stuff, and it's going to be too costly. So we're stuck here, Elon. You're losing your money trying to get us onto other planets. Cosmic Nut says Mars is farther away from the sun. Wouldn't it be colder? Well, it's colder at night precisely for that reason. But the problem is Mars has no atmosphere and no magnetic protection from the sun. That is why it is such a arid, desert-like look. It's because a lot of the sun's energy for the Earth gets bounced back into the space, whereas Mars receives all of it because it doesn't have a protective layer, doesn't have an atmosphere, and it's getting blown away by the sun rays that are too strong. YouTube told me I got demonetized for saying women are dumber than men and the word T. Okay, so we now know that Pearly Things has been demonetized for these sayings. I mean, it's been she doesn't follow the history or what, because it's been a word that has been banned by monetization for a long time. So of course she would get in trouble if she uses it. Ayan says, why not invest in the desert wastelands here on Earth rather than waste it on Mars? That is a good thought. You know, if you think you can make a glass bottle of a self-sustaining system on Mars, you certainly could do it on a desert wasteland here on Earth. And certainly it would be easier, because now you can carry a lot of matter to your glass bottle. So yeah, start by building the biodome. I mean, this is exactly what the movie Biodome is about. Now, you don't want to make parties in it. You don't want to end up having these two clowns into it. But other than this, yes, the idea is great. CZ from Binance is saying, 10 years ago today, I quit my job, sold my house, and aped into Bitcoin. No, I am not saying you should do the same. Many people asked, how could you take such risks? Me, I knew I could easily get a job. Everyone's risk profile is different. Learn risk management. Yes, those are good counsels. You do want to throw yourself into what works. You want to have strategies for fallback. You want to have the leisure to be able to not withdraw your Bitcoin. So you need some plan as to how you will survive without the Bitcoins. It's so heartbreaking when I see people get into Bitcoin but get out of it a year later because they need the money. If you think in terms of needing the money, you are outside of the thought process. You are outside of the Bitcoin culture and what's required to make money on this market. If you want to go Bitcoin, you need to be absolutely certain that you can survive with nothing, that you will never need to withdraw, that you will withdraw at a leisure, that you will withdraw when you want because you truly believe it's the peak you have achieved. But you have to be ready to go full survivalism. You have to be ready to live in the woods. You have to be ready to give up anything rather than sell your Bitcoin. And I see these new people that just got into Bitcoin, like my neighbors, and they're always in the oh, how do I spend? Oh, I have these spendings to do. This is important. This is more important than Bitcoin. No. If you want to become wealthy, there's nothing more important than Bitcoin. In fact, Michael Saylor, I had an old video of Michael Saylor. Michael Saylor says it best.
Which one's the best crypto asset? Well, Bitcoin's the best crypto asset. Okay. What's the second best? There is no second best. There's no second best crypto asset. There's a crypto asset. It's called Bitcoin, right? Right? There is no second best, okay? But take all your money, buy Bitcoin, then take all your time, figure out how to borrow more money to buy more Bitcoin, then take all your time and figure out what you can sell to buy Bitcoin. And if you absolutely love the thing that you don't want to sell it, go mortgage your house and buy Bitcoin with it. And if you've got a business that you love because your family works for the business, it's in your family for 37 years, and you can't bear to sell it, mortgage it, finance it, and convert the proceeds into the hardest money on earth, which is Bitcoin.
Absolutely poetic. Oops, we are with Napoleon now. Absolutely poetic performance here by Michael Saylor. And it's true, you just buy Bitcoin. See, Michael Saylor was in loss because he bought Bitcoin at the peak of the last bull run. But he was thinking in terms of long term. He was thinking, hey, either I do this or I have this huge skyscraper filled with my employees who are draining every week more of my money. And there is a good chance that I'll never see that money back. So I'm paying for the insurance, I'm paying for the activities, I'm paying for this huge skyscraper rent, I'm paying for 500 employees, they're draining millions and millions every week from me. And then someone has a baby and someone has health care they need, and I need to pay all of this, and now I pay for health insurance, and now I need to file the papers to pay for health insurance. Are you fucking insane? Do you think you're going to make money that way? When you have the rise of an asset that is unique in the history of human civilization, true rarity, true finitude, there will always be 21 million Bitcoin, never one more. There is no chance you can find a way to invest money that's better than this. No chance. Impossible. And today, we have learned just before the show, Bitcoin rose to 40K. Yes! It is going well for Bitcoin, my friends. Very soon, we will be at an all-time high. For anyone who has ever bought Bitcoin, they will be in the green. They will be in profit. Isn't that fantastic? Barnaby Buto says, every time my friends try to get me in a stupid business project, I just tell them, you are distracted. Buy Bitcoin. It's impossible. With the state collecting money on sales tax and your employees collecting money for their retirements and the unions and, there's no way you can make money, and you're going to charge, like, I just look at a local dentist office. You pay for the secretary that makes your calls. You pay for the software that she uses to schedule your appointments. And at the end of the day, I sit on your chair. You paid for the chair. You paid for all the material that's around me. You do some stuff in my mouth. And then I get out and I pay $60. The $60 doesn't even get to the dentist. The $60 gets grabbed somewhere in the furniture cost, the insurance cost, the operational insurance cost, the energy cost to maintain the building, the secretary, the appointment secretary, the assistant dentist person, or any of the material they had to buy to make this cleaning happen. There's no chance my $60 gets anywhere close to the dentist. Tillerson says, I had an extra $10K when I was under $1. When it was under $1, I thought it's not even worth a dollar, though. Well, imagine you had put $10K then. Imagine. Trump vows to cancel Biden's executive order weaponizing artificial intelligence. Former President Donald Trump vowed to reverse President Biden's recent executive order, which regulates artificial intelligence. While the order contains provision to protect Americans' privacy and civil rights, many have criticized it as yet another example of government overreach, which will stifle innovation and control the free flow of information. Just this week, Biden's Homeland Security Secretary even admitted that they are weaponizing artificial intelligence to target American citizens for political speech. Did you hear that? He admitted it. When I'm reelected, I will cancel the AI executive order and ban the use of AI to censor the speech of American citizens on day one. Okay, I'm not super enthusiastic because I'm sure the military and intelligence community under Trump will make plenty use of AI. I haven't seen from Trump any action that suggests that he would radically shut down their ability. He wants to limit the effect on free speech. Now that's easy. But the AI are still going to be operational. Literally a bunch of blacks targeting white people, going to hunt white people. This is happening in American cities right now. Are they whites? Are they whites? Target them. They're white. Get them. They are beating up every white person. They're jumping every white person, of course. Okay, people are telling me this is from 2020 BLM. Well, that is, I don't know. I don't know the date, but Atlanta says Tillerson. All right, it could be from Atlanta 2020. I don't know, but it's absolutely worrying. Israel has announced the withdrawal of 70% of their forces from the northern Gaza Strip. I don't know. This is reported by Jackson Inkle. He's a very anti-Israel proponent. Is that true news or is that wishful thinking? Because I'm surprised that Israel would be withdrawing from North Gaza due to operational failure and resistance strikes. I don't know. Maybe it's true. It's interesting if it's true. It would mean that Israel has been unable to fight the resistance through any other means than airstrikes, and that there's too much of the Gaza resistance present on the ground for them to make advances. But I don't know that that is true. I don't know. It's, you know, sometimes Jackson Inkle, he can be such a wishful thinker for his side that he can get overexcited at reports that are favorable to Gaza. We'll have to follow this week, but you have to be careful when you read news reported by these activists. Black women have a that is something I didn't know. World of Statistics was asking, what's a fact that sounds like a conspiracy theory? And IO says black women have a higher murder offender rate than white men and Asian men in the US. That is stunning. Because, you know, there is this saying that if you care about murder, men are the most likely to commit murder. But I hadn't realized that walking on the streets, just out of random, you have more likelihood to be killed by a black woman than by a white man. Look at this. The percentage offender rate. Black female, 8.7 murderers per 100,000 population. White male are at 5.2. Black males are at 95.5. So it's fascinating. Fascinating. I had never, I can imagine myself being killed by a white man, a black man. Like, I can imagine. I'm on the streets. There's some guy that seems suspicious. He heads toward me, shoots me for some reason, or maybe he tries to steal something from me and I move back and he shoots me. But I have never imagined being killed by a black female. And yet, that would be a more likely outcome than being killed by a white male. Fascinating. Because I've spent a lot of time commenting on race statistics in my life. But that one, it probably passed under my eyes many times, but I had never taken it in. I had never made the realization. U.S.-made bombs dropped from a U.S.-made aircraft. 300 dead Palestinian civilians, half of them children. This is a NATO genocide. Genocide was trending today on Twitter. I'm happy that there are... that I'm not the only one using this word. A lot of people agree with my characterization of what's happening as a genocide. despite the fact that there was some counter in the modern day debate. The counter was coming from the other side, but I think no one has an argument that this is not a destructive operation over the society that lives in Gaza. And that if Israel gets to the end of it in their current goal and target, there will be no more Muslim society in Gaza. It will be either rebels and desert, or it will be even Israeli settlers coming in. That's a genocide. That's what it is. Gad can't help but criticize this call for justice, and that's because he knows his side is currently committing an injustice. Because Gad was reacting to this video, and he was saying, "Beautiful. Thank you, François Legault and Justin Trudeau, for creating such a vibrant, multicultural environment." But there's nothing criticizable about this environment. This is a bunch of people who are saying justice for Palestine. They are saying, hey, an injustice is currently committed, and the people who are committing it should be held to account. That is, you know, Gad says you created a vibrant multicultural environment. Well, actually, even I, as a critique of multiculturalism, that seems like a plus for the world to have this debate where Jews can be told, hey, you're currently committing a genocide right in the nations where they are operating this genocide from, which is the U.S. I mean, this, I think, is Canada, so but you know, North America in general. I think it is a great aspect of multicultural society that the Jews can get immediate feedback on the genocides that they commit in the Middle East by manipulating the American army to do so. Silver Spider says, "I wish white people could rally like this without being called Nazis." Yeah, that would be great. That would be another group who could say stuff to the Jews to give them direct feedback on their behavior. John Drake says, "Now you can see why Jonathan Greenblatt is frantic." Yeah, I mean, this is a crowd. You can't gather a crowd of Jews for Israel like this. Now you might gather kind of a loose support for military or a kind of pro-Israel mood. But in Montreal, I don't think you gather a crowd as big as this for Israel's action. In fact, we have surveys now, and what's happening is the new generation, people between 18 and 34, they overwhelmingly disapprove of Israel's action in Gaza, 67% versus 30% approval. Whereas if you get into the older generation, it's completely mirrored and reverted. 55 and older, 63% approval, 34% disapprove. And so we have a very generational phenomenon here where we're going to have to wait for the boomers to die. But once they're dead, there's going to be massive opposition to Israel right here in America. Can't wait for it. Can't wait. Boomers, you know, it was good while it lasted. I don't want you to speed up your own death, but, you know, if you could go to McDo and perhaps eat an extra double Big Mac for more clogging effect, that might be interesting. I discovered that there's now a chat on Twitter. Twitter streaming has introduced the chat. Now, this particular stream had zero chats. So I felt kind of, shy. I didn't want to be the first to chat just to test the chat. So I didn't chat, but here it is. Send. And I was able to type something here, but now the broadcast has ended. So is it possible that Elon is preparing for a JF deal? Bring JF to stream on X? Maybe I could deal something, an exclusivity deal with Elon. You pay me $150 million and I will stream every day on X. I may have a small crowd, but, you know, it's an important crowd, Elon. People like DK Shadow, they are big business people of the crypto world. They shake a lot of big, important things. And if I can, and Flardacel and Tiacilin and Silver Spider, if I could bring these guys on a regular chat of your X platform, it's going to grow. Everyone will hear about it. Joe Blixam says, can't you stream there now? Yeah, I can stream there, but I've been deciding not to stream because I tried to host it multi-stream a couple of nights, and the fact is it wasn't pleasant yet. It's not a built platform. There's no place for viewers to gather and feel like they are part of a single chat. There's no super chat as far as I can tell, although I think I saw some people have super chats, but maybe not in Canada. So I think there are some things that deserve improvement, but already having a regular chat is a massive improvement. And eventually I would love to stream only on X, but we have to get to a point where it's feasible, where it's interesting for people also. The Pentagon has confirmed, this is the news item on the thumbnail, Pentagon confirms U.S. warship, commercial ships under attack in the Red Sea. Today, there were four attacks against three separate commercial vessels operating in international waters in the southern Red Sea. These three vessels are connected to 14 separate nations. Distress calls came from the ships. So they were commercial ships. They were unable to defend themselves. There was a ballistic missile fired toward one of the ship. A ballistic missile, this one induced damage. this one was a ballistic missile, induced no damage. This one induced no damage also. And then there was drones coming from, there were drones, two of them were shut down. And also no damage and no casualties. So as I said earlier, this all seems like minor attacks, but this may get the U.S. ships involved much more and may increase the likelihood of future attacks. And so this all came from the Yemen region right here. So the Houthi-controlled region is in Saudi Arabia at the tip right here. And the missiles were thrown somewhere in the southern part of the Red Sea. And they were thrown toward commercial ships. DK Shadow says these are probing attacks. It's very possible that there is more to come. As the wife of Donald Trump Jr. once said, the best has yet to come. Yeah, I think it may very well be just them measuring their material and measuring their ability to throw the missile, seeing if there are anti-missile defenses up. That kind of stuff. Oh, I'm tired these days, but I'm very happy. My otitis, I'm not feeling it today. So it seems that it's gone. I had an inflammation of the inner ear. I've not been feeling it too much. And I've not even taken anti-inflammatory. And it seems that my speech was okay. I don't feel congestioned in my nose. So, and it's been 50 minutes. So I'm doing good, but I'm tired because I have a lot of work on my shoulder. A UK ship that was hit by Houthi terrorists is in high risk of drowning. So that was reported by this guy concerning an IDF spokesperson. But I don't see this in the reports on the US side. So is it really at risk of drowning? What is the risk of drowning, really? When there are missiles raining from the sky, aren't you at risk of drowning by definition? Dead Star says, do you think there is a timeline where the USS Liberty, Kennedy, and 9/11 had one agent provocateur and still managed to retain the loyalty of the American neocon? Yeah, it is... But isn't that our timeline? I'm looking at your description and I'm like, what is it in this description that makes it not our timeline? Yeah, I mean, definitely these actions in a context that was fully controlled by centralized media, it was possible to do that much dirty dealings and yet not lose the public approval. And you can see it in the generational divide of right now. You can see it in the generational divide. Who is currently anti-Israel in this whole conflict? It is the rising generation that has exposure to free media. Period. The boomers are still sucking on the teeth of cable TV. Feed me my propaganda. They will die not knowing these things. And the people who are raised by freely operated, independently created media, which the elites have been in a headache since 8 years, wondering how we're going to put control over this. We can't buy out all of the Timpool. We can't buy out all of the JF. It's like way too much money, way too many people. It's uncontrollable. The machine of liberty has been activated, and it's already doing its wonderful work in the coming generation. Rodita Sid says, men on the street videos coming out of Gaza is what makes it impossible for the IDF to maintain control. Yes. And let me tell you, I see a lot of these videos. I don't show 99% of them because they're way too disgusting. I wish I could, but I don't know what's the, you know, there are some rules on Odyssey about gore stuff. The problem is I don't want to show them because they're gore. I want to show them because they're violations, they're blatant violations of human rights. Like bodies dismantled. Sometimes they have pieces of children. They put them back together. You can see them put back the arm, put back the intestines inside the belly. And it's like, that's a dead child from IDF action. It's too disgusting. I can't show it on screen most of the time, but it's sad. There should be an understanding, and I'm sure that the Odyssey people are relatively open. But at the same time, I don't want to trigger a rule. I don't want to even be close to the line, you know. So very often, I keep myself from publishing these videos on the screen. But let me tell you that what I say on my show is highly influenced by all of the suffering I see throughout the day. With these children being totally dismantled in pieces, and it's horrible. It's horrible that in 2023, a group would do this. Here, Israel thinking that they are allowed to do this in the era of cell phone filming. Elon's accusation confirmed, Soros linked to pro-Hamas funding. Elon Musk last month accused Soros of fundamentally hating humanity and eroding the fabric of civilization. Today, Israel's UN ambassador, Gilad Erdan, condemns Soros for funding groups allegedly supporting Hamas. Over $15 million from Soros is said to have been directed to NGOs that support Hamas and aim to dismantle Israel as a Jewish state. Yes, I think Soros is a troublemaker in Jewish circles. I think that he's not always in line with the Israeli Zionist Jews, and he has such a kind of octopus control over leftist think tanks of the US and of the Western world. It's very possible that a lot of his funding on this issue would go to probably not Hamas terrorists. It's probably, you know, probably unfair to describe it that way, but it's probably to people who are relatively sympathetic to some form of resistance to Israeli aggression. I think that's like, I can't believe that I'm here in 2023 defending George Soros from from being mischaracterized here. You know, whoa. Let's not call George Soros pro-Hamas. I think he may have funded some initiatives that are relatively against Israeli aggression, and you guys are confounding this with Hamas because, I mean, this whole Hamas thing has started on October 7th, you know, bringing it to the spotlight and insisting on the term Hamas and pointing to all these protesters on the street and calling them Hamas supporters. This has all started on October 7th. I think there is a lack of subtlety here in the right-wing critique of the Hamas, so-called Hamas supporters. You know, there are people who are on the streets protesting. They object to Hamas terrorism, but they understand also that Hamas is an organization that will have its ins and outs in Gaza. There will be populations of innocent people that are targeted by Israel because of Hamas action, and that these innocent people shouldn't pay the price of being kind of taken for a guilt by association type of argument with Hamas. There is a lot of intelligent conversation missing here. What else do we have before we close the show? Jeff Bezos hires Elon Musk for rocket launches. Jeff Bezos' space efforts at Amazon and his space company Blue Origin have been hit with frustrating delays, including a rocket engine explosion during a routine test earlier this year. With mounting delays, Amazon was forced to sign a deal with rival Elon Musk SpaceX for future rocket launches. Yeah, I think that there is something about Jeff Bezos has become extremely rich, but he's not deep inside. He doesn't have the engineer mentality the same way Elon does. You know, Elon... However little respect I have for the Tesla, and I don't care about this car, you have to give it to him. You know, he did from scratch. He has kind of recreated American manufacturing of a very complex system that is an electric car. And so he has this kind of engineering to him, despite the fact that he's made a lot of money on stuff like PayPal, which is on the same category. You know, it's mostly software engineering, the same way Jeff Bezos and Amazon is mostly software engineering. Elon has other cards up his sleeve that Jeff Bezos doesn't have. Kraft9 says, JF, to the contrary, Bezos is a very talented electrical engineer. Yeah, but as far as I know, he's never put it in action into a deployment of a manufacturing process of high science, you know, at the border of scientific innovation. I get what you mean. And by the way, Amazon is filled with robots. Bezos is capable of managing robots, apparently in a very good way. But that's very different from pushing the boundaries of something doable for humanity, which is the making of rockets, the flying into space. That is very hard. And I think he doesn't have it in him, this kind of being at the edge of knowledge, knowing the difference between hiring a scientist that will drain your salary for years and not produce anything at the end, and knowing the difference between this and having someone ready to surpass the edge of human discovery. DK Shadow says, Elon can inspire and rally world-class engineers. Exactly. I think that's the difference. Much love, everyone. Thanks for being here, and I'll see you all tomorrow.